Can you put this on silent?
I thought it was on. Hold on.
Yes.
Yes, it is on silent.
Nayim Oksim Vitalis.
Okay. Silent.
So we'll see that there's a tremendous emphasis on the word Ochazin. Rashi points this out in his opening line to Masechta Bava Metzia. By the way, Masechta Bava Metzia has 119 blocked. But in his opening line, Rashi says we have to be holding in Masechta Bava Metzia. Dafka Ochazin. Why? What's the significance of Ochazin? Rashi says the Shneim Muchzakim Ba. So Rashi introduces already in the first opening comment in Masechta Bava Metzia, maybe we can close the door, the most important concept in this Masechta, which is called Chazaka. And in this case, Ochazin generates Muchzakim. So now, Ochazin is a word that relates to the physical reality, that he's holding on to it. Muchzakim is a word that reflects the halachic reality, the halachic status. So if you're holding on to something, then you have a chazaka. But let me point out by way of introduction that there's a fundamental difference between what we call metaltalin and karka. In English, they loosely translate metaltalin as movables. That's kind of a loose translation. I don't know if an eved, for example, is that called metaltalin? Is an eved movable? Maybe theoretically you can pick them up and lift them and put them down somewhere else. And then there's karkos, which we usually translate as real estate. Oh, thank you so much. Real estate. So the halacha of ochazim only applies in the case of metaltalin. So our discussion here is about metaltalin. Now, if you open up for a second to page Kuf, 100 blot, into the Masechta, so you'll see that there, that this is really the source for the concept of chazaka. And this is the, you know what, I'll close the door. I don't want to delight anybody. So that machlif para b'chamor. So imagine the following case: they do what's called a kinyan chalipin, and they exchange a cow, and in this case, a pregnant cow that gives birth to a calf with a donkey, a chamor, the yolda. So now the issue is: at what point in time did the cow give birth? So Zeh Omer, the seller, right, the seller who sold the cow, he claims, Ad Shalom Macharti, that the birth of the cow took place before the Mechira. And therefore, hence, it belongs to the Mocher. Zeh Omer, but the Lokeach, the purchaser, he claims, Mishalakachti, that the birth took place after the lekicha, after the kinyan was effectuated. So you have the birth of a cow, and you don't know if that birth took place before, prior to the kinyan, or after the kinyan subsequently. So the Mishnah says, Yachloku. We divide the calf in half, where it doesn't mean physically, but we sell it and we divide its money. And the Gemara immediately asks the question, Amai Yachloku, why do you apply the principle of Yachloku? Velechse Bershuse Deman Kaima. Why not just simply figure out where the calf is now? Where is it physically? Is it in the Rishus of the Mocher? Is it in the Rishus of the Lokeach? Velehevi Idoch, and the other one becomes Hamotzi Mechavero Olaf Araya. So this principle here on Daf Kuf is the most important principle in monetary law. And that is, in order to determine who has the burden of proof, the responsibility of bringing evidence, it all depends on who's the motzi. And this has nothing to do with eating matzah in this case. But motzi means that in English we call it possession is 9/10 of the law. If I have to take something out of your possession, the burden of proof is on me. So for example, if the mocher is holding on to the to the Vlad, and then the Lokeach says, well, wait a minute, that's my Vlad. Then the burden of proof is on the Lokeach, and clearly he has no proof because no witnesses were there to tell us exactly at what point in time the birth took place. But in any event, it's quite clear for this Gemara that when it comes to metaltalin, to movable objects, possession is absolutely primary. And that's called chazaka. So when the Gemara says, let's analyze, let's investigate and find out where the baby is, and then we'll figure out who owns the baby. In other words, the other person who wants to get that vlad, he's the one who has the burden of proof. And hamotzi mechavelo olav haraya, the word hamotzi means motzi min hamuchzak. So we always have to analyze who is the muchzak. So that's the concept of chazaka. And Rashi points out at the beginning of Masechta Bava Metzia that in the case of Shnayim Ochsim, the Mishnah is emphasizing that Shnayim Ochsim, that they both have a chazaka. If one of them had a chazaka, then the other one would be Motzi Mechaveil Varaya. So for example, let's say two people walked into Bezdin holding on to a talus. Well, they're both holding on to the talus together. So then, how are you going to apply the principle of Hamotzi Mechavel Varaya when they're both holding on to the talus together? So the Mishnah is going to tell us that in this case, we're going to split the talus in half. Now that's something that we did in the case of the Vlad on Daf Kuf, but the Gemara wasn't happy about that, because in the case of the Vlad, it wasn't a situation of Shnayim Ochsim V'Vlad. One of them was holding on to the Vlad. And therefore the Gemara insists that it's Hamotzi Mechavel of Araya. The Gemara is going to have to reinterpret that Mishnah on Daf Kuf in the light of our Mishnah, because our Mishnah only implies Yachloku if they're both Muchzokim, as Rashi says, Dafka Ochsim Dishneim Muchzokim Ba. There, in the case on Daf Kuf of Amachlev Par B'Chamor, it's not Shneim Ochsim Ba, it's only Echad Ochis Ba, whether it's the Mochir Lokech, and the other one becomes the Motzi. And therefore, Omer Abchiyav Ar Ovin, over there on Daf Kuf, the mission of Amachlev Par B'Chamor must be interpreted in a very strict or very narrow Ukimto Be'omedes Bi'Agam, that the calf is neither in the Mochir's Rishus nor in the Lokeach's Rishus. Now we have a new din of Yachloku. This is not to be identified with the Yachloku of our Mishnah. We have two Mishnais of Yachloku. One is here in the first Perek, the opening Mishnah in the Masechta, and then we have a Mishnais of the eighth Perek on Daf Kuf, also Yachloku, but in two different Yachlokus. I can't overemphasize this. The Yachloku of the Mishnah on Daf Kuf is not based on what is, but based on what isn't, so to speak. Not based on the chazaka that exists, but rather based on the chazaka that doesn't exist, because the baby, the Vlad, is located in an agam, in a no man's land. So no one has a chazaka. Now this Mishnah, that no one has a chazaka, and therefore Yachloku, is very problematic, because we have a Mishnah in Bava Basra which is called Kol Diolim Gova. Everybody knows what that means, but we'll mention it anyway. And there are two people who are fighting about a ship, and each one claims it's his yacht. And the Gemara says Kol Diolim Gova. You know, let the strong one beat up the weak one, and whoever, you know, the big mafioso, he's going to get the ship. Very strange halacha, right? Kol Diolim Gova. Should I write that on the board now that we have the utensils? Why not? You know, let's celebrate. Wait a minute. We have this. We have this now. Stephen found this one.
Okay. Again, we have to erase all the green stuff.
And we come to the conclusion. Oh, wait a minute.
Is that any better?
This is. I think you got to dip it in water or something. It's like. And I'm going to give you two things because Balala has a shtepi of it. Okay. So what do we have here? Wait a minute. This is not what I need right now. I mean, this is helpful, but let's try this. Okay. Kol Diolim Gova. Okay? So that's number one.
Call the Olim God.
Okay. Then, we have something called, I'll give this to you so it doesn't get lost, we have Yachloku. Okay? Now, Yachloku appears in the Mishnah on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, and in the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Amud Aleph. This is the case of Shnayim Okzim, and this is the case of Hamachlif Para Bechamor. Now, in this case, we have Shnayim Muchzokim, right? So how do I gauge whether you gentlemen are serious about your learning? The question is whether you're writing this down. So we know that everyone here in this room is very serious about their Torah, because you're all writing this down. And that gives me such a great feeling that I'm teaching Torah to those who are Mashiv Torah, right? Okay? I was being a little facetious, you don't mind. And then we have a Mishnah over here of Yachloku, where Ein Chazaka Klal, right? And why is there no Chazaka at all? Because it's a case of Omedes Be'agam. Now, in the case of Baba Basra, this is the third parak of Baba Basra, Daf Lamed Daled, it's the case of the Sfina, it's called Hahu Arva. Okay, Hahu Arva. So what we have is Ein Chazaka Klal. So Rabosai, where do you find the contradiction here? In everything that I wrote on the blackboard.
Well, the first case, the strong is going to get it, mm-hmm. and in the case of the Vlad, it's going to be split.
Correct. Why do we split the Vlad? Why not apply the principle called the Ongar?
Oh, you could ask it the other way.
Why does the Gemara establish a Baba Basra called the Omgavar? Why not apply the principle of Yachloku? Because if you'll tell me that in the case of Ahu Arva there's no Muchzok, no one's holding on to the Sfina, well, in the case of Machlu Parva Chamar Omedes Ba'agam, no one's holding on to the Vlad, and there we apply the principle of Yachloku. You see that Yachloku fits into two categories. It's either Yachloku because they're both Muchzokim, or it's Yachloku because no one's Muchzok. We always split it. Why then introduce Kol the Omgavar? And if you're going to introduce Kol Yom Kippur, why not apply that in the case of Omedes Ba'agam Achlut Parvachim?
Yeah, I think in the case of the ship, one man is one knows it's his and one knows it's not his, but he's going to act like it's his and be fighting for it. In the case of the Talis, both believe that they really got it picked up at the same time. They both believe it's theirs, but no one's lying here.
Again, I have no problem in the case of Talis. The Achloku of the Talis, Rashi says, is very logical. I want to know the case of Machlif Parah B'Chamor. Is somebody lying here? I don't know. This one says it was born before the Mechira. That's the Mocher's claim. And the Lokech is claiming it was born after the Mechira. Are they lying? I don't know. In the case of the ship, are they lying? Maybe each one inherited it from his grandfather and they both have the same grandfather. I don't know. You know, you could always work that out. But let's go through the Rashi. Rashi says, Dafka Ochazim, the Shnei Muchzokim Ba. And what is the nature of that Chazoka? The Ein La Zeh Koach Ba Yosem Mizeh. That Reuven doesn't have more of a Tfisa, more of an Achiza, grabbing on, than Shimon. They both have the equal Tfisa. And now Rashi spells it out. She'ilu hoya biyad echad levado. Right? Let's take a look at the Vlad in the Vlad case. Where is the Vlad? Well, if the Vlad is in the hands of the Mocher, for example, havi idach, then the Lokeach becomes a motzi michavel of araya. So Rashi is basically applying the principle on Daf Kuf to our Mishnah. And he's saying in our Mishnah, they're both Ochazin and Eino. But in the case of Hamachlif Parah B'Chamor, before the Gemara introduces the Kimta of Omedes Ba'agam, there one person is Muchzok. Says Rashi, if we apply the principle of Hamotzi Mechavel Varaya to our Mishnah, that would be the case where the talus is in the hands of one of them. So imagine, Rabosai, if two people grab onto a talus, but by the time they get to Bezdin, one of them has dropped his, you know, how long can you hold on to a talus? You remember Bill Cosby, how long can you tread water? How long can you hold on to a talus? So he dropped the talus, and the other guy is holding on to the talus. Rashi's saying, I don't care what happened yesterday, but today one person is holding on to the talus. That's like the case where the Vlad is in the possession of the Mocher Ledugma, and therefore the Lokeach becomes a Motzi Mechavel of a Raya. Now Rashi goes off on a tangent. He wants to know exactly what the Raya is. How do you prove and establish with evidence your possession over something? How do you win the case? And Rashi says, be Adam, he has to quote, he has to evoke the testimony of two witnesses, Shehi Shalom. Okay, Rashi's about to ask another kasha, we'll get to that in just a minute. So Rashi, at this point, is oblivious to the sugya in Baba Basra, that's called Kol Yom Gavar. He's only operating with two sugyas. The sugya here at the beginning of Bav Metzia, the sugya of Hamotzi Mechavel Varayon Daf Kuf in Hamachlif Par B'chamor. And Rashi says that these two sugyas are exact mirror images one of the other. And they'll both break down to the following. A and B. A is one person Muchzok. And then the other person becomes Hamotzi Mechavel Varayon. And therefore, in the case of Machlif Par B'chamor, if the Vlad, for example, is in the Rishus of the Mocher Lokeach, has to prove and adduce Eidim that it's his. In the case of Shnayim Oksim, if one of them grabs the Talus and the other one doesn't have an Achiz on the Talus, then the one who doesn't have an Achiz on the Talus, he's going to have to bring the proof with Eidim that it's his. And now we have a second principle, and that is that if both are Ochazin, or if neither one of them are Ochazin, so then Hamotzi Mechavel Vray doesn't apply. So what's our fallback position when we don't have Hamotzi Mechavel Vray? How do we paskin?
Yechluk.
And that'll apply in our Mishnah because both of them have a Chazokah, and in the Mishnah Daf Kuf because neither of them have a Chazokah. Hence our question from Ahu Arva, which Rashi doesn't address. Says Tosus Tema, the second Tosus on your page. I don't get what's going on. And Arva means a Sfina, a boat, the Omar, the Gemara establishes, called the Olim Govar, the Perkreskas Habatim, Govavasu Daflamidalit. So the answer we know, without looking. Who can tell me the answer to Tosus Kash without looking? Why does our case of Yachloku have nothing to do with the sugya in Baba Basra of Ahu Arva?
Because here we see physically that they actually each are holding it.
Because here they're both muzakim. There no one is muzak. The Eishloma, the Ochas and Shani. But now Tosus wants to give us a little bit of an insight as to why Ochas and Shani. And he says the following. The Choshev Ke'ilu kol echad yeshlo ba bevadai hachetzi di anan sahadi divide tofis haidi dehu. Wow, this is a mouthful. But I have to tell you, Rabosai, these words of Tosfos, like, if you're really into, you know, this part of Shas, and it means a lot to you, I mean, these words have to, you know, resonate in your memory forever and forever. And the key of keys are two words here, da'anan sahadi, which literally translates, but it's really an idiom. We testify. That's the literal translation, anan sahadi. So we have here testimony. Now, testimony requires two witnesses. We don't have two witnesses here. But we do have something that reaches up to the level of two witnesses, and that's called chazaka. Why is there a chazaka? Because each one is holding on to the talus, and therefore it's chashiv ki you call echad yeshlo ba bevadai hachetzi. Yeah, that Tosus is really struggling here. because you're involved in a contradiction in terms if you say that holding on to a talis gives you the power of two witnesses. Because now there are two witnesses that says that testify that it belongs to Reuven. We have two witnesses that testify that it belongs to Shimon. So Tosfos now takes half of the testimony. We can reconcile this contradiction in two witnesses versus two witnesses if we cut down each one of the testimonies to half. So that means the tfisa, the achiza of Reuven, gives him edus on half the talis. And so in the case of Shimon. So we now have two witnesses that say that half the talis belongs to Reuven, and two witnesses that claim that the other half of the talis belongs to Shimon. Is that reconcilable? Absolutely. The Anan Sahadi Demai the Tuf is high. We testify that which is grabbed on by him, Didehu, it belongs to him. So Rabosai, what would be if they're not equally holding on to the talis? Let's say that Reuven is holding on to 3/4 of the talis and Shimon is only holding on to 1/4 of the talis. Right, we'd have to say that as far as the 3/4 of the talis, Shimon has no tfisa whatsoever. And therefore the Anan Sadi tells me that those 3/4 of the talis belong to Reuven. Now, does Reuven have a tfisa on the last 1/4 of the talis? I don't know. That's very enigmatic. And what happens in a case where they're holding on to the fringes of the talis? Is that the same as holding on to the talis itself? But the key of keys here is the Anan Sahadi, because this sugya of Yachloku has nothing in common, really, with the sugya Daf Kuf of Omedes Ba'agam, because the Yachloku of Omedes Ba'agam is not based on an Anan Sahadi. Because Tosfos says that what creates the Anan Sahadi? Ochazin. But here it's in the Agam. If it's in the Agam, there's no Ochazin. So you can't say it's Anan Sahadi. So it's interesting. There are two ways of understanding Yachloku. One is the Yachloku because we know, and one is the Yachloku because we don't know. In the case of Omedes Ba'agam, we don't know who owns the Vlad. So we're going to split the Vlad. It's like Shlomo HaMelech with the baby. In our case, we're going to split the Talis because we know it's an Anan Sadi. We have testimony on behalf of Reuven, we have testimony on behalf of Shimon in half the Talis. So it's not similar to Kol D'Olam Gavar, but yet we're still stuck. Because, which Tosfos doesn't address, there's a contradiction between Kol D'Olam Gavar and Bava Basra and Yachloku in Perek HaShoel on Daf Kuf. Because in the case of Yachloku on Daf Kuf, with Omedes Ba'agam, there we have no Muchzokus at all. If there's no Muchzokus, then we go back to the principle of Ahu Arva, and we apply the principle of Kol D'Olam Gavar. So we're still a little bit in the dark over here. David?
Why is it the case that if it's not known, like with the Vlad, why is it said...
Say it one more time, if it's not...
Why is it in the case where it's not known, like with the Vlad?
Right.
Why is it set aside for Aliyah HaNavi comes and it tells us who the money belongs to?
What would be different then?
It seems that waiting for Aliyah HaNavi is only applicable in a Kol D'Olam Gavar kind of situation where we can't get involved. If we can't get involved, we'll wait till Yo HaNovi. But here, we have a Yachloku that's based on the fact that it belongs to one of these two individuals. If it belongs to one of two individuals, we just don't know which, then let's cut our damages and let's split it in half. Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be a case where we can't get involved. Now, why can't we get involved? I mean, that we'll have to discuss when we get to the sugya of what's called Yanichu Ad Sheyov Eliyahu.
Is Anan Sa'adi for half for each of them equivalent to one witness for the whole thing, in which case it's
no real. In other words, if there would be one witness that testified that Reuben owns half and Shimon owns half?
No, one witness that owns Shimon, it's his talents and how many distances.
What if one witness would testify that Reuben owns the entire talus? Another witness contradicts him and says Shimon owns the entire talus. And are they holding on to the talus?
Presumably.
Yeah, if they're holding on to the talus, yeah, then we have an Anan Sadi. I don't even need one aid for each.
The
aid is superfluous and absolutely unnecessary. I don't even know if they would invite the aid into Bezdin.
Will we throw them out anyhow?
I don't know. That's a different case of Veda Echad Bachosha. You know, you have to know more of your Yoridea for that. But I'm just pointing out that I don't even know if such a reality would ever come to be, because if they're both holding on to the talus. Now, your question, Jerry, would be relevant if, let's say, no one's holding on to the talus. Well, let's say the case of Kolion Gavar. What would be in Kolion Gavar if each claimant, you know, would adduce the evidence of one aid? Perhaps then Beis Din would split the Sfina into two, because we don't have to apply the principle called the Olga. We already have Eidus. But then you have Eidus Mukheshes, you only have one Eid. I mean, you'd have to really figure that all out. Now, there's a technical Tosus here on the top of the page, and he wants to try to figure out, as he always does, how a Masechta opens up with a Mishnah. How does it connect to the previous Mishnah? In the case of Omitzia, there's like a pressing need to find an answer to this question, because you've taken the Bavis and you've divided them into three. I mean, originally it was all one Masechta. So if it was all one Masechta, we should be finding a flow, a connection between this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah at the end of Bava, at the end of Bava Kama. Because Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, when he organized the Mishnayos, there is a logical progression. So Tosfos has a technical question. He says the following. He doesn't even ask the question, but he gives a technical answer. Aidi di Airi Bagozel Basra, at the end of Masechta Bava Kama, the previous Mishnah, before ours here, Machlokes, in the case of Nisores, and that's Nagar Ubal Habayis. So we're talking about a carpenter, and you hire a carpenter, you employ him to create an object out of wood, and as a result, when he saws the object, saws the wood, there's what's called nesores. I guess you'd call it something like sawdust. And sawdust apparently has some sort of a market value. So the question is, who owns the sawdust? Do we say that that's like a product of the labor of the carpenter, the Nagar? Or do we say no, since the raw material, namely the wood itself, is owned by the Balabais who commissioned the Nagar, therefore he owns the Nesoris, which is part of the Eitzin. So that's also a case of a Suffolk Mammon, meaning we don't know really who owns this object. And the Gemara goes into various details, which we're not going to study now. So in any event, Tosus wants to suggest that the end of Bava Kama the beginning of Bava Metzia is a continuation of the end of Bava Kama. Alright, let's go through the Mishnah. That's what I think would be our goal for today. How much time do we have? We have a half hour? Alright. Hoshnayim ochzim betalus. Zeh omer ani mitzasiya. V'zeh omer ani mitzasiya. It was a hefker talus. Very interesting, because if the talus at one point in time belonged to either Reuben or Shimon, then we would apply the principle of hamotzi mechaver levaraya. That's based on a different kind of chazaka, which I'm not going to discuss with you now. Just those who are erudite scholars will know that there's something called a chazaka de meikara, and a cheskas barakama means that since I owned it yesterday, then we assume that I own it today, and therefore motzi mechavel v'raya applies. But we're talking about a metzia. A metzia means that this talis is hefker. And the question is, who picked it up first? Each one claims he picked it up first. If he picked it up first, then kula shali. So Reuven is claiming the entire talis is mine. He doesn't. He's not happy with getting half the talis. V'zeh omer, Shimon claims kula shali, I got there first, I picked up the talis. So at this point, the Mishnah deviates from what it says on Daf Kuf. On Daf Kuf we say that if you're Muchzak, then it's yours. And if Reuven is Muchzak on half the talis, then half the talis is his. If Shimon on half, half the talis is his. No, the Mishnah is not willing to accept that. In the case of the Vlad, we're going to say that the Vlad is going to be split. In the case of the talis, we're not just going to split the talis. We're going to require, this is a takonis chachamim, a shvua. And that means that each one of these two claimants, is there such a word, claimant?
Yeah.
He's going to have to take an oath. And if he doesn't take the oath, then he's out. You know, some people might say, I'm too afraid of taking an oath. You know, you have to have what's called Nikitas Chefetz. You know, you take out the Sefer Torah and you take an oath. I mean, that's a scary, wary thing. I mean, it's one of the Aseret HaDibros. So we're not going to get involved in that. But if he's willing to, and he has the gumption, he'll take the oath. Zei Shava, Reuven will take the oath. She'ein lo ba pachos michetzio, that he has at least half. We're not going to let him take an oath on the entire talis, because we're not going to give him the entire talis. So let him take an oath on that part of the claim that he will be awarded, namely half the talis. Zei Shava, Shima likewise, will take an oath. She'ein lo ba pachos michetzio, he doesn't have less than half. The Achloka, and then we apply the principle of the Achloka. Now, how powerful is the Shvua? Is the Shvua just a supplement? But really, we're giving you half the talis because of your muchzakus, because you're ochazin? Or no, the Shvua is really a birur, it really clarifies that the truth is with him. And we really believe that they both picked up the talis simultaneously, and each one has half the talis. And Rashi himself seems to vacillate back and forth on this point. Because if you recall the first Rashi on the page that we did earlier, Rashi says that if one of them is muchzak, then the other one is hamotzi mechavel of a raya. And Rashi says, what raya does he bring? Right, if one of them is muchzak, what kind of a raya does the other claimant have to bring if he wants to get it out?
Shvua.
No. Rashi says Edom. Oh, why? Because Edom clarifies. Edom is a birur. Let's write that word on the board, because again, we're going to have it over and over again. Again, I'm assuming that you're all writing this down in your notes, right? That's why I'm taking the time of writing it on the board. Which means I'm a total jerk, right? Okay, fine. But we don't want to talk Lashon Hara against ourselves. So we have a concept which is called Yachloku Bishvua. Okay. And the question here is whether the Shvua itself is a birur. That's the key word here. Question mark. Does the Shvua itself have the weight of evidence? If it does, then even in a case where one of them is holding on to the talis and the other claims that you grabbed it from me, and he's willing to take a shvua to that effect. So you follow me? Reuven is the muksuk, Shimon is the moksi. Shimon's claiming that you, Reuven, grabbed it from me, and I'm willing to put my reputation on the line. I'm willing to take an oath. Well, if an oath is a birur, which is another word for raya, then hamotzi mechavel of a raya means that Shimon could just take an oath. So Rashi says no. Shvua is not a biru. Rashi says, Eino neman ze litol b'shvua. So that's what he's saying. He's not believed to take it with a shvua. In order to take it out of someone's possessions, you need a biru, you need a raya. A shvua is not a raya. So it means that according to Rashi, the purpose of the shvua here is secondary. Everything depends upon muchzakus. But we're going to make a condition here. We're going to say, you know what? We're not going to allow you in this case to collect half the talis based on your mukzakus until you take a shvuah. Because in this case, we're not sure. You know, there's some hanky-panky that might be going on. Maybe Shimon, you know, lunged, you know, he jumped out for the talis. He saw that Reuven was grabbing the talis. He says, no, this is a talis. I want to get it, right? It's a Brooks Brothers, you know, garment. You know, I don't know if you listen to the radio, the Brooks Brothers, you know, they have this, it's funny how the Israelis pronounce it. But anyway, so Tosis is a pella over here, because if you look at Tosis, he says that Yachloku is based on what? What were the two key words in Tosfos?
Anan
Sahadi, right? Now Anan Sahadi, right, is testimony. Now imagine in the case of Ochazin, right? Imagine if there were two Edim. So would we say that you have to take a Shvuah? We never found a shvuah in a case we have Edus, because Edus is the primary or the ultimate evidence, right? Proof. We don't need to support a claim that's already supported with testimony with a shvuah. If that be the case, then the shvuah of our Mishnah is totally out of whack. It's an exception to everything, all the rules that we know. Again, it's clear that if each one of these litigants, both Reuven and Shimon, had Edim to support that claim, respectively, then we would split the talis based on Edim without a shvuah. Okay, in our case, maybe we're afraid of hanky-panky because we don't have Edim, so we don't know exactly. Maybe Shimon grabbed the talis, so we need a shvuah. But once Tosus introduces an equation between Ochazin, right, Ochazin and Anan Sahadi, if you take that equation to its logical conclusion, then it's a pella. Why does the Mishnah require that Reuven and Shimon each have to take a shvuah? I mean, if Reuven has testimony on his behalf, Shimon has testimony on his behalf, why shvuah?
Isn't there an Indian of shvuah where there's one Eidim?
But again, Anan Sahadi means it's two Eidim. Let's not confuse ourselves. I see, Jerry, you're hung up on one Eidim. And that's your thing.
I didn't understand.
You know, you're going to Canada. Yeah, okay. You, when you bring back scholar in residence, then we'll talk about one aid. Bully neither. I'm just joking. Okay. So let's go on in the Mishnah. The Mishnah, the plot goes thicker. Why? Ze omer kula shali veze omer chetzi shali. It's really interesting because one of these two litigants might be a very honest person, and instead of lying and claiming that he grabbed the talis first, he says we both grabbed the talis simultaneously. So he's very honest about it. The other fellow doesn't seem to be, you know, the epitome of honesty. He's claiming that the entire talis is his. So what do we do in this case? So the Mishnah says, Ha'omer kula shali yishova she'ein lo ba pachos mishlosha chalokim. In other words, on the half that Shimon admits is not his, Reuven cuts out that half and he takes it for his own. That's not in the dispute at all. Now the dispute becomes a Shnayim Oksim on the second half. So we're going to have to split the second half. So on half the talis, there was never less madapolik. There was never a machlokas. And therefore, Reuven gets that up front, you know, shave that off. It's not part of the issue, the judgment. On the second half of the talis, we have a Shnayim Oksim B'talis. Now the strange thing is that, well, maybe it's not so strange, you'll tell me, but I would have said that let's take half the talis and give it to Reuven. Let's reward Reuven with half the talis up front. Let's say the talis is worth 100. Let's give Reuven 50. Geendik, that's finito. There's nothing to talk about. Now there's going to be a case for a dispute about the other 50. So in that case, each one should be taking an oath on how much?
A
25. Do you follow my point? That's not the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not happy with Berzon's thinking over here. My thinking would be, take the 50, because there's no dispute about the 50, and cut it out. You know, just leave it out. It's not even part of the discussion. The whole discussion is on the other 50, and each one is claiming that he has at least half of the other 50. So let him take a shvua on half of the 50, which is 25. But the Mishnah doesn't like that pshat. I'm not sure why. Because zei shava she'ein lo ba pachos mishlosha tfachim mishlosha chalokim. Right? So one of them is going to take a shvua on three quarters. That's Reuven, we called him. But Shimon, who already admitted to half the talis, he's going to only be rewarded with one quarter of the talis. So Yishava Sheim Lo Pachos Mi Revir. You know, it's always going to be important that on that which we're going to award you, you're going to take a shvua. In other words, what's the nature of the shvua? What's the content of the shvua? The answer to that question depends upon another question. What are we going to award you if you do take the shvua? You follow? We're going backwards. You know, it's B that sheds a light on A. If at the end of the day the ruling is going to be X, that's what the shvua is going to be. Fine. Zenotel Shlosha Chalokim is Zenotel Revir. Okay, that's the ratio of the Mishnah. So let's just fast forward to the Gemara at this point. The second half of the Mishnah is going to be taken up about 8 blocks from here. Lovelim lemisni zeomer animitzasi of zeomer animitzasi zeomer kulishali zeomer kulishali lisna chada. Why the double language? Number one, each one says I found the talis. Number two, each one says it's my talis. Lisne chada. He could have said one of those two. Either each one claims he found the talis, or each one claims the talis is his. So the Gemara says the following. We have to rewrite the Mishnah, so to speak, or reinterpret the Mishnah. And therefore kula shali. So it means that there aren't two different cases here that the Mishnah is addressing. One case where each one claims I found it, and the other case each one claims it's my talis. No, it's all one case of mitzia, of a found talis. Each one is claiming I found it exclusively for a first, and therefore the entire talis is mine. So now the Gemara says, okay, you've solved one problem. I know now that it's not two cases but one, but nevertheless the Mishnah could have reduced its language. It could have abridged, curtailed its language. Listening, it could have said ani mitzasiya. He didn't have to add v'kula shali. Right, that much we could understand on our own. Vanoya Dana will know that what he means to say when he says ani mitzasiya kula shali. What was the problem? What would if we have misunderstood if the Mishnah hadn't spelled out v'kula shali? If it just would have sufficed with ani mitzasiya. So Gemara says the following, itad ani mitzasiya. If it only said I found it, havamina, I would have thought my mitzasiya. How do we interpret the word mitzasiya? Apparently the word mitzasiya lends itself to two different possible interpretations. One is I saw it first, and the other is I picked it up first. Havamina, I would have thought ani mitzasiya re'isiha. I was the one who saw it first, and therefore it's mine. And now the Gemara wants to analyze, is it enough when you see something lying on the street and you see it and have intention to pick it up, you haven't even picked it up yet, that gives you rights to the object. Again, you have an object that's a mitzia, it's ownerless, it's hefker, it has no simonim. That's the second paragraph about mitzia, it has no simonim. And you saw it first. I saw it first. You follow? It's like if you're ever running to a line, you know, let's say you need a document in some official office and there's going to be a line, right? So you want to buy tickets at a movie or something. So, well, I saw it first. You know, what do you mean you saw it first? Well, you didn't get online. I got online first. you know, you get on a bus and there's only one seat left on the bus. Well, I saw it first. No. Afal gavdalas yodi. So I would have thought that it's enough that I saw it first. And here you have to underline the next three words. Biri'iyah bi'alma kani. Then in the case of Hefker, you could be kone from Hefker even with Re'iyah. In other words, if something has bailus, it belongs to someone, then you have to do a ma'isakinyan. You have to take the object into your rishus. You have to be moshechit, let's say mashicha, you grab it and you pull it. But in the case of Hefker, where there's no owner, then maybe Re'iyah itself is a kinyan. Therefore, what do you say?
Is this a question of the Gemara?
No, this is a Havamina. The Gemara is actually serious about this Havamina, that if the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, had not added the two words Kula Shali, you would have thought that it's enough that you saw it first, and therefore you have a rightful, justified monetary claim according to Jewish law that it's yours because you saw it first. And the Mishnah, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, had to add two words, Tana, Kulishly, just didn't say animitzasio, which means re'iyah, but he says kulishly, it's mine. What is the implication of kulishly? I made a kinyan. I did a maisa kinyan. I lifted up the talis. Re'iyah lo kani. That with seeing it, you're not kona. Well, a havamina rabosai that bereiya kani. I mean, this really undermines everything we know about dini mamonos. I mean, dini mamonos requires a kinyan. Reiya is a very nice thing, but it's, you know, reiya is very good for aids. You want to testify about someone who killed somebody. Reiya bi'alma is enough for testimony. But reiya is not going to make a kinyan on something. What's a havamina that reiya is kona?
Somebody else might see it at the same time simultaneously. Therefore,
right.
You're not a migrant.
Go figure out who saw it first.
Right.
You know, Moshe Rabbeinu wants to go into Eretz Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu refuses. But he says, Alea Rosh HaPisgah, Sa Einechu Re'eh. So I heard once from my Rebbe, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu answer Moshe Rabbeinu? Go up on the mountain and see the land. Shkoyah, see the land. So he wanted to suggest the following. The land of Israel needs kiddush to sanctify. For example, if I have fruits that grow from the ground of Eretz Yisrael, they're sanctified with kiddushas, truma, and maisus, and shvias. But that requires kiddush. Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to effect kiddusha and kiddush to the land. Because if Moshe Rabbeinu would have been Mekadesh the land of Israel, then all the mitzvahs that we fulfill from the ground, from the produce of the ground, for all of eternity, it's all based on the original Kiddush of Moshe Rabbeinu. So Moshe Rabbeinu thought that the only way he could be Mekadesh Eretz Yisrael is if he enters into the land and initiates the process or the enterprise of military conquest of the land. Hashem says, no. You can be Mekadesh the land of Eretz Yisrael even without entering in the land. What you need is what? Re'iyah. Re'iyah is enough. Sa einecha ure'eh. And once you see the land, that will sanctify the land. So we see that Re'iyah does have a halachic status. It's not just in order to testify about something, I have to be a spectator, I have to see it. But seeing does change the status of something. It's Mekadesh. So I wanted to suggest, I mean, I heard this from my Rebbe in a different context. He was giving a shiur about Eretz Yisrael. And I thought maybe we could plug it in here at the beginning of Bar Mitzvah, that there's a Havamina that you could be Kona something and acquire ownership as long as you don't have to take it out of anyone else's rishus through Re'iyah. Again, we still kind of, you know, we still have your problem about who saw it first. I don't know. But the fact that the Re'iyah might effectuate a kinyan in Hefker. So take a look at Tosus, Divra Maskel Bere'iyah. It's a very short Tosus, but you always have to be very careful about the short Tosus. Bere'iyah bi'alma kani. Afal gav the ketoni v'masnis and daf tesa v'beis ros hametzivi omer l'chaver t'nol li to lo kana v'ri iya v'chein v'ros hametzivi nofal olel l'kame v'daf yu ketoni nami to lo kani. Why would our Mishnah have a havamina and slug up that hav by adding ani kula shali? A havamina that Riyah Bal Makani. We have two Mishnayas which already disprove that possibility. They establish that there's no kinyan through Re'iyah. For example, a Mishnah Daf Tes that says you saw the Metziah, you told your friend, get it for me. No, you're not going to. Or if you fell on a Metziah and you didn't do a Maisa Kinyan Hagbah of lifting it, you're not Kona, even though you saw it. So Tosesk Tani Nami Do Yarei. He says, Matzi Lemidchi. It's possible that Re'iyah is a Kinyan, despite those two Mishnayos, and there's no proof from those Mishnayos. Well, I came in the Omer Tnoli. Once he turned to his friend and he said to him, bring it over to me. It means, I want to make a kinyan on it. Or he thought mistakenly by falling, you know, throwing his body on the mitzvah that's his, he makes a kinyan. Is goli daite, he has revealed his das, his intention to lo nichole le mikni achi agil yadam, meaning that he needs a kinyan. He doesn't want to be kona with Re'iyah. Tosfos is saying that Re'iyah requires what's called das kona. You have to have a definite intention to be kona through Re'iyah. But if your intention is to be kona by lifting it up, for example, you tell your friend, bring it to me so I could lift it, or you throw your body on top of the object, that's a kind of a kinyan yad. Therefore, he was megala das that he doesn't want to be kona with Re'iyah alone, he wants to be kona with a kinyan. That's when Re'iyah is not kona. But if he wants to be kona with Re'iyah in the Havamina of Asugya, he could in fact be kona with Re'iyah. You see that Tosfos takes this very seriously. Now let's look at the next Tosfos, and I'll show you to what extent Tosfos takes this Havamina seriously. Ha'amrina b'perek abayis v'aliyah, this is at the end of this Masechta, ha'bata behefker kani. That if you look at something that's onalis hefker, you are kona. So we see that on the contrary, you can be kona hefker with Re'iyah. Zoktesvis hainu, what was the case at the end of a mitziah? Sha'asa maisa koldahu. He does a minimal action, kigon shegadar geder katon. He makes a little bit of a fence around the object. And even though in classic kinyanim that would not suffice, it doesn't reach the bar, past the bar of kinyanim, but nevertheless in hefker, that's enough for kinyan. By the way, if you make a gedder around something, a fence around something, what's that called in the laws of kinyanim? Anybody know? It starts with a ches, ends with a resh, has a tzadi in the middle. Oh, you guessed it. Chatser. And what's a chatser? Chatser means when I have something that I want to acquire ownership over and it's in my domain. By making this little gader around, you know, around this mitziah, this object of hefker, I create a kind of quasi chatser. Now you might ask me, what if it's in Rishus HaRav, it's in the public domain? How could I make a chatser in a public domain? So that's going to be the sugya on Daf Ches of Dalad Amos Shal Adam Konoslo. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
Here on Daf Yud. I'll just show you the Gemara so you'll see it inside. You don't think I invented it. Amar Reish Lakish is about 10 lines up from the bottom of Daf Yud. Arba Amos Shal Adam Konoslo Bechol Makom. What is Bechol Makom? Even in Rishus HaRav, Rashi says that 5-7 lines up from the bottom of the page. Im Yesh Svivosav Dover Hefker. A person walks into an area. The radius, the circumference is Dalad Amos. And there's a Dvar Hefker, there's something that's onalus within that radius of Dalad Amos. Ein Acher Rashoid Litovso. He gets first rights. No one else is allowed to grab it away from him. And this is even in Rishus HaRav. So therefore, in the case of Habata Behefker Kani, where Tosa says he makes a little fence around it, he sets up a chatzer to be Kone, even though that chatzer is technically Rishus HaRabim, but nevertheless, we're going to recognize that chatzer as if it's yours, no less than Dalet Amos, which the Rabbanan established as a takon. Okay, Rabosai, I think we'll stop here. To let you summarize, we have a Mishnah at the beginning of Sanhedrin, we had a Mishnah at the beginning of the third Perek of Ksubis, and we have this Mishnah at the beginning of Bava Metzia. How many of you heard all those three? Is there anyone who heard all three? Oh, that's not bad. So I've given you a sampling of those three. And then we'll have to decide what we do next week. Jerry, you won't be here. So I don't know if you get a vote or not. You know what I'm saying? We have to negotiate that. Now, I think Don Schransky might be back next week. He's in somewhere in the north or something. I don't know where he is. So maybe you'll pass on your voting rights to him. I don't know. To be honest with you, I would like this Masechta choice to be the same as the one for my 11:45 class, because otherwise I'm carrying an extra burden. Now, for my 11:45 class, I learned Be'ir. You know, this is just to try to get by and understand the Gemara with Rashi and a little bit of Tosis here and there. Some people would call the shiur that I just gave an Iyun shiur. There's no objective definition of what's Bekiyus and what's Iyun. But when I teach an Iyun shiur, I like to have at least one sefer that I can call a crutch, that I can fall back on. So in the case of Sanhedrin, I think I found a crutch. It's called Gvuras Yitzchak. I have not found a crutch, neither for Ksubas nor for Bava Metzia. And it's a pella to me, because I know the Rav, my Rebbe, taught Bava Metzia. But Heshi Reichman has what's called Rishivos Shirim, and he only starts with Eilu Metzias, the second parak. So I don't know what's going on here. I'm definitely missing something. Maybe the professor Lunzer, maybe Norman will help us figure out if there are notes from the first parak of Bava Metzia. Now, if we find no notes on Bava Metzia, then I have to find a different crutch, and I don't have the Gvuras Yitzchak on Bava Metzia. So what do I have on Bava Metzia?
Can we learn the second parak of Bava Metzia? Do you have a crutch for that?
A shnat of Eilu Metzias.
Yes.
Whoa. Last time I learned Eilu Metzias, I was in fourth grade, and I didn't understand the word.
That's scary, Rabbi.
I can't believe they teach Eilu Metzias in fourth grade. Now I think they've changed the whole minute. They learn brachas and they learn sukkah. And they, you know, but in the old days, I mean, gentlemen, did you learn Eilu Metzias when you were in fourth grade or third grade, whatever grade you started? Eilu Metzias. You know, they thought the kids will get excited about finding a lost object and then when they return it, it's the most complicated sugyas of Yei Shalom Midas, Abayin Rava. David, I'm just curious, why do you have this affinity for Bava Metzia? What's wrong with Sanhedrin or Ksubis?
They're fine.
No, I'm just wondering. It sounds to me like you...
I've exposed them in the past. So I have some familiarity with them. So I hear the terms now.
But the truth is that to be exposed to the Bavas, you would have to be 150 years old. And not about Jew. You've had to have learned... You learned from day one. I mean, it's just endless, the Bavas. It's endless. I would say the Bavas makes Masechta Shabbos, which may be officially, I don't know, I'm not sure about this, the longest Masechta Shabbos. Easy. Could you imagine anyone saying about Shabbos that it's easy? Trust me, Shabbos is not easy. But it's easy compared to the Bavas. Yes.
You didn't even bring up any book from Ksubis, from
so that's what I'm telling you. I have a veto on one thing up front, that which I've taught in the last decade. So Yehud, if you want to hear about Pesach Pasuach, you have to go online to Why You Torah and look for Berzon. That's your job. I know you're very busy and you don't have time for that, but I want to learn new areas. So the Pesach that you're referring to is already Pasuach. So that's a video. How many shiurim do I have on Ksuvos? Somebody told me he found 75 shiurim of mine online on Ksuvos. Asked me when I taught that. I have no recollection.
2011.
So that's my only veto power. I have not taught Sanhedrin because I never learned Sanhedrin. I have not taught Bav Metzia because I just didn't get around to teaching Bav Metzia. And I have not taught the third parak of Ksuvos, which is a very profound parak. That's the parak of Kim Levi D'Rabbamina. And I started it yesterday. I found a crutch. The Chassam Sofer is amazing on the third parak of Ksuvos. I always admired the Chassam Sofer, but I never actually worked hard on the Chassam Sofer. So Mirtz Hashem will let let time do its thing. Maybe we'll try a few more experiments. I don't know what we're going to do until finally a year from now we'll make a decision. All right. Everyone should have a wonderful Shabbos.
Sanhedrin.